Today, I'm interviewing Faisal Masood, the CEO of Fabric, and Ryan Bartley, one of the co-founders of Fabric. Fabric is an API-first headless commerce platform, which we'll learn a lot more about throughout the course of this interview. Both of them have extensive experience in the commerce world. Ryan was the manager of product at eBay for checkout, transactions, and returns, while Faisal worked at Amazon as the director of Amazon Basics and Amazon Warehouse and more. And his recent position before joining Fabric was the CEO of Alphabet's Wing delivery service. So welcome to the CoreWeave podcast, Faisal and Ryan.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah, I originally reached out to Faisal after reading a very interesting Substack article, which was entitled, "Will Shopify Scare Amazon Into Another Web Store Fail?" And I was like, okay, I got to read this. and it had some pretty interesting things in it. You know, Faisal, you described how Amazon's feeling threatened by Shopify and attempting to go the web store route again, while Shopify is trying to go after larger businesses, which was actually kind of new to me and actually sent me down the rabbit hole of figuring out what Shopify Plus was. But you kind of stated that, but they're both likely to fail at that. And so can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. So the part about Amazon talking about coming up with a Shopify competitors, you know, no new news. It's Project Santos has been tagged in a bunch of articles about how they are about to launch a competitor product. You know, the failure of Amazon Web Store was not, you know, something that anybody was surprised about, because the product that they had built was very much built for merchants selling and wanting to sell on Amazon. So, you know, if you weren't going to have a robust offering on Amazon, then frankly, it was not the right product for you. And it was really built at Amazon. There's this one general rule that if you're not part of the core products or the core businesses, typically those other side gigs don't work out. I mean, checkout by Amazon or Amazon Payphrase or Amazon's auction store and any of these little side projects, usually are Amazon Fire Phone. Web Store was very similar to that, where it was a sort of a side gig that they tried a couple of times. And after a bunch of efforts, they kind of gave up. What they didn't realize was that Shopify was going to become such a dominant player, because a lot of merchants just can't have that same sort of e-commerce in a box experience on Amazon. And Shopify has done an incredible job building out a real product suite with their marketplace for SMBs. Where they are falling down is once you reach a certain scale, you know, these apps are not built for enterprise grade customers. So that's where kind of Fabric comes in. But to answer your question, the web store failure multiple times is not preventing Amazon from coming back in. And I feel like they're being forced into doing this by Shopify, just because naturally, if you look at Cyber Monday and Thanksgiving, they beat Amazon on GMV. I mean, that's a staggering statistic if you think about the fact that this, you know, e-commerce platform now has enough merchants to take on Amazon's marketplace. That's very threatening to Amazon. And the largest reason for that is Shopify can turn on its marketplace whenever it wants. And, you know, they're saying they're not going to, but I don't believe them.
Well, it is interesting, because when the Shop app came out, that was the first thing that came to mind. I was like, oh, this is just waiting for them to turn on the marketplace. Like right now they've made the app so that it's a way to sort of shop again, or maybe kind of find some shops. It's not the same type of thing that we would think of when we think of Amazon's marketplace. But yeah, it seems like they could turn it on anytime.
They can. And, you know, frankly, when they first launched Shop, I was quite shocked at how, I found it quite irrelevant, because you don't shop that way as a human being, right? When you're shopping, you shop on the store and then you go to that store's app and then you go do what you have to do. This entire app is built around tracking your orders, which to me seems a little bit nonsensical, because when was the last time you tracked your Amazon order?
Well, for me, as you say that, I'm thinking, have you ever heard of the deliveries app for Mac and iOS?
No.
Okay. Well, it's fine. You know, that's an app that I use as a consumer where I add things. And it's funny that you said that's kind of like the core part of Shopify, because, or the shop app, I mean, because it's one of the things where I'm actually really confused with the shop app now, because I'll get notifications for things I didn't even know I ordered from a Shopify shop. I mean, it's really bizarre. I get all kinds of weird push notifications.
And to that point, John, like, I don't understand. Like, I don't go to shop. If you're not a marketplace, why am I going to your app? Why? To do what? It makes just no sense. I don't know, Ryan, how you feel, but I downloaded the app because I heard about all the hoopla. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm here. What do I do now? It was dysfunctional because a bunch of merchants, no real coherent way of navigating. And I didn't understand. So I think the struggle is Amazon's trying to be Shopify. Shopify's trying to be Amazon. And both of them are completely missing the mark in the middle, which is marketplace shoppers shop differently to the way, you know, DTC shoppers shop, which they go to the brand, right? That Allbirds customers not going to go to shop to go to shop. They're going to go to Allbirds.
One of the things that you mentioned in that article was something along the lines of who is Amazon and who is Shopify. And I think Ryan had used the Star Wars reference, you know, of Rebels. You know, what are your thoughts about what we're just talking about in relation to that, Ryan?
Yeah, I think Shopify came out and said that they're arming the rebels. And, you know, I think it's a cute reference, and I'm a, you know, a kid of the 80s. And so, and I enjoy the Star Wars reference, but, you know, if you really think about Star Wars, there was a rebel group that was, you know, had to have some magical powers and a few lucky breaks to defeat the big Death Star in Star Wars. And so it's kind of my same feeling too, is, you know, that's actually what Shopify is. I think contending is they're giving the right tools to this group to, you know, compete against Amazon. But as you look at Amazon and what tools that they built and their capabilities, they're light years ahead and more advanced across the board than, you know, what Shopify could ever build or ever consider. So I think they need to be very considered about who they're waking up and picking on. Because one thing, John, that I see in the industry for small business, if you think about it, a small business, when you're starting out, you're starting in test, and you're testing a market, and you're testing a customer, and you're testing a product. And where are you going to test that product on? The place where eyeballs are. So Shopify ends up being a listing app for marketplaces. So you fire up Shopify, add your store, you have no traffic to your store, and so you list your product through Shopify's interface onto Amazon.com, eBay, and other marketplaces. And so for them to pick a fight with where your customers are shopping is, you know, kind of head scratching to me. I see Amazon as an enabler for SMBs to grow into a brand. And then as you grow into a brand, then you should start to invest in your brand experience and your own direct-to-consumer business.
And that seemed to be what I picked up on kind of towards maybe the end of the article, was just sort of both of those platforms are decent places to start or, you know, get visibility as you sort of build your store, build your brand. And then when you get to a certain size and have certain needs that you know, would move over to something like what Fabric is providing. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you think about it, as you grow as a business, you have found a customer and found a product that, you know, is resonating with an early adopter. Well, what do you do as a mid-market or to grow up to a mid-market brand? You have to expand your customer selection, right, to go from early adopters to hopefully lots of different kinds of customers. That entails you to expand your product selection. So you're not just selling one thing that, you know, got traction, but you're becoming a destination to add more share of wallet. And then below that, then you have to not sell out of your house or your single location, but you may be selling across multiple different touch points. And so those channels make a difference. Amazon should play a role in that, as well as your own direct brand channels where you need to build your brand. And then you need to think about expanding into other things like wholesale or retail. So as you grow up as a company, the tools that you need to enable what we call multi-channel commerce, you know, where you're selling across all these different touch points that a consumer or a business may touch, you need tools to enable that. So that's where Fabric comes in. We see as you grow, if you're high growth or an established business, then we're giving you the advanced but still approachable tools to be able to manage that business growth.
Yeah, it seems like at least what I gathered from what I read online, you know, from your site, it's essentially saying, don't be stuck on a particular platform, be able to connect with all the channels. So I want to get into, you know, more into what Fabric does. I think it's really interesting, but I want to take a step back, especially for the entrepreneurs that listen to this podcast, and just ask you, Ryan, I just want to ask you what prompted you to co-create Fabric? Because this actually started, I think you started this 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think finished our year three, and so going on to year four. And so, yeah, the genesis of the company is very simple. My background is in scaled e-commerce. So I worked at three different companies that did over $10 billion in e-com revenue. And, you know, all the way back to the days that Dell Computers, when it was one of the fastest growing companies in the world, you know, everybody was looking at their business model. And we were building early kind of e-commerce infrastructure and experiences. And at that time, I managed over a $10 billion business unit, went on to eBay Global Marketplace, where I met Fassel, and was leading several product and technology teams. So got to see the good macro view of e-commerce. And then my final operating experience was at Staples, the office supply superstore, where people don't realize Staples is one of the largest B2B e-commerce companies in the world. We were managing, under Fassel's leadership, over $12 billion of B2B e-commerce business. And so, John, what I saw in, you know, those experiences was we were building super advanced tools because, frankly, we had the resources to do it. And I was also, you know, leading mobile at Staples, where I was buying all the software in the industry, left, right, top to bottom, to enable commerce. And what I realized is the market for e-commerce software just wasn't stepping up and solving the problems that brands need. And so, you know, typical founder story, I wanted to go solve the problem that I solved for myself and my team, but do that for everybody else. Because as I talked to companies, you know, that had grown or were scaling, they had the same issues and no one was solving for it. And I didn't think anybody could solve for it as well in the market, because, you know, it requires that level of like sophistication that only you get at really large marketplaces like Amazon and Alibaba and eBay and a few others, where you understand that like the tools that can be built to enable merchants and marketers. And so that's really why we started Fabric, is just to solve for, you know, giving those tools that others can't build, those advanced tool sets, as well as solving for, frankly, old software in the market. I mean, if you look at the e-commerce platforms that exist today, they were architected 15 plus years ago, pre-mobile, pre-cloud, and they frankly haven't innovated. So it's shocking to me as I see it. You know, commerce happens in every single organization in the world in some form or fashion. Meanwhile, there's only a handful of companies that offer capabilities, and those handful of companies haven't innovated. So for me, you know, it's truly solving for that big market need.
Well, what you just described is, of course, hugely ambitious and nothing small and going, I don't know if I want to use the word against, but, you know, is working with a lot of really big players that are kind of already there, but of course not solving the problems that you're wanting to solve. You know, I know that you and Fassel have a huge amount of experience with it, but I'm just curious to know, you know, what's what's the starting place for that? And I'm asking from a point of view of there's a lot of people, maybe not a lot of people, but there's, you know, plenty of people out there that have a lot of experience around something. They recognize a problem and it bugs them and it's a constant sort of like itch, you know, that they want to go solve. But how do you go from that to literally the startup? In other words, you know, how did you essentially find your co-founders and say, we're going to do this and this is how we're going to do it? And, you know, did you have to pitch? You know, I mean, you know, what did that look like? How did you do? That's a huge step to take, I think.
Yeah, agree. I mean, for me, it was actually a very interesting journey. I worked in large companies and we're building these advanced tools, right? And so the benefit of that is we did a lot of R&D, you know, at eBay and Staples and those other scaled businesses, and have lots of scar tissue of what worked and what didn't. So literally, we were the customer of the product that I'm building. And I think that just gives us a very quick advantage. As like people look at what we built over the last couple of years, they're shocked at the scope that we have. They're shocked at how advanced we are. And, you know, most startups have a problem or identify a problem, but they go through this incubation phase that no one talks about. No one ever shares in the news. It looks like they're overnight hits. But, you know, typically there's a few to several years where a startup kind of wanders in the desert trying to figure out the right product market fit, the right customer set, the right everything, where I think because of our experience, we didn't have to go through that phase. We spent a little bit of time up front when I started Fabric with a co-founder working on a couple of things. One is technical architecture. We knew that we wanted to start this business at a time when really technology and cloud platforms had advanced to a certain level. And so we spent about 6 months really doing R&D on technology, making sure we made the right technology choices that will kind of last into the future. And then, of course, we spent a tremendous amount of time with customers, like our expected customers, just understanding and revalidating all the things that we needed. And I think that goes back to really Fassel's leadership, you know, coming all the way from Amazon of being super customer centric. And it's very simple, you know, if you focus on the customer and you identify insights around what they need or what they want, and then you build to that and you keep listening and you keep doing that. So that's what we've done at Fabric. So yeah, starting with a beachhead, you know, me and a co-founder and basically at a card table, and then scaling it up very quickly over the past couple of years has really been a fun journey for me as an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And it came out, I think in October, you know, so it took, you know, at least a few years, like you said, sort of an R&D to be working on this and then to eventually launch it. And it looks like around that time, Fassel, that's kind of when you came on board, when they were kind of ready to make the product public. And before you were, you know, Ryan was just talking about how you worked at Amazon, but you also, right before that, were CEO at Wing, which is an Alphabet company for delivering, I think, on little planes or something like that, drones, which is interesting in itself. But what was it that kind of, I don't know, lured you that made sort of Fabric and what Ryan and his co-founders had built that kind of, you know, got you to want to leave that and go over and work with what Fabric's doing?
Yeah. I guess the short answer is that I was close to the co-founders, and Ryan and I have worked together for a long time now. I think probably going on 10 years now, eBay and Staples, that we've always remained in close contact and have, I still remember the day, I don't know, Ryan, if you do, they called me to WeWork to talk about how to productize some of the work you were doing. And what felt like an epiphany back then of not being consultants, but actually being, you know, product developers years ago, for me, I always kind of stayed connected to the team. So knew what they were up to. And, you know, at Staples, we went through a pretty large exercise of getting rid of our legacy platform on IBM WebSphere. And that journey onto microservices was sort of the underlying underpinnings of why, you know, even Fabric today is so relevant in how Ryan came about in his journey, seeing all the gaps. I think for me, it was more the onset of COVID and the acceleration of e-commerce. I think my first statement to Ryan when I saw the tools was, why is the rest of the retail world using such crappy tools when Amazon has, you know, the best in class internal marketing, merchandising, inventory planning tools? It's a massive disadvantage for retail. Why not level that playing field? And that's what got me excited. I also was pretty close to one of the investors who came into our extended seed round. So there was a bit of conversation back and forth on, okay, where do we take this? And, you know, for me, it's less about what Fabric's going to be going forward. It's about how big an impact we can have on the world of commerce. And I think the magnitude of what Fabric can do is, you know, unprecedented in the space. So that's what excited me. And of course, working with Ryan, we kind of know our styles, and we're different in different ways, and really complement each other in our approach. So I felt like this was a good place to, if I'm going to jump into something that where I'm going to be CEO, this is probably the place to be.
That's pretty neat. What I'm curious to know what your take is on, what is unique about Fabric, which to me at the high level is that it's headless commerce. It's not something that is sort of tied specifically to a platform, whereas Amazon Marketplace requires Amazon, and Shopify, you know, at least not Shopify Plus, you know, requires the hosted platform. WooCommerce requires WordPress. What is it about headless commerce and how Fabric is approaching that that is unique and different and you think, you know, sets you apart?
Yeah, I guess I'll break it down into a few things. I'll let Ryan talk more to the headless part because that's pretty obvious, but there's pieces to this on Ryan's vision of how he came about to thinking of what to address first between building the headless CMS and then this suite of APIs. I would say there's a couple of differentiating factors with us. You know, we can build, many people can build headless commerce, right? There's no unique IP there. And it's understood that it is the path forward. What differentiates us is a couple of things. Number one, the management team has over 50 years of e-commerce experience. And it's one thing to go with a platform. It's another thing to go with a partner. And having built over a dozen businesses from zero to, you know, in the billions of dollars for every single one, and having built brands on the internet such as Amazon Basics from scratch, and built reverse logistics, and you know, being CEO at Google for Project Wing, I think the amount of use cases that you can throw at our team about what's wrong with your e-commerce business, I would probably say 99% of those use cases between our team, we can solve for you because we've been there, done that, seen it. If you look at our other companies that are doing this, they're either from a headless perspective very attached to Shopify, or the team doesn't have that level of general management experience where they've built businesses from scratch, you know, such as the ones that I did at least, and products that Ryan ran, where we took it to scale and beyond. And having worked through an omni-channel, multi-channel, complex environment of technical debt, I think we bring something to the table that's very unique to us, which is a team that understands how to run a business. You can't say that for a lot of other companies out there selling the same software, because they have been in either technology teams or sales, not general managers. So you tell me you have a SKU, we can walk through the permutations of how to promo it, how to liquidate it, how to do collect freight, how to do damage allowance, like walk through any part of the co-op funding. I can help you understand what's the right way to do it based on your circumstances. I think that partnership and what we have stood up as a ProServe division inside of Fabric called FDS, it's our Fabric Digital Services arm, where we help B2B companies that don't have a mature product management function seriously on board Fabric as a platform, but provide that product management as a service and solutions architecture, I don't know of other people who can do that or have that capability. And I think it's the combination of the team, the services layer, and the platform and the experience that really sets us apart from anything else out there. I know that's long-winded, but that's my thinking on it.
Yeah, Ryan, what's your take?
Yeah, Fassel talked about the general management part, which is, I think, a huge differentiator. And then you couple it with our product and platform background. And so if you could see me, I'm doing a bunch of air quotes. You know, I was early in e-commerce before people even understood what e-commerce would be or become. I had background as an early cloud computing product manager. Again, in air quotes, when people couldn't explain what the cloud was. And so we've kind of been on the forefront of, you know, platform evolution and platform change. And John, what I saw on the platform side was, you know, the internet as a platform itself is a world-changing, multi-generational kind of thing in our lives, and it touches every part of our life. And what had been missing to date was a commerce layer, which is shocking to me. So if you think of like Amazon Web Services or Microsoft Azure, you know, they built services like compute and storage and networking, the underpinnings of, you know, software. And then you can build anything on top of it. You can build Netflix on top of it, right? Who could dream that of a streaming, you know, service? And you can build anything else on top of it. Well, no one had done that for commerce. And so that's really ultimately, you know, where I think Fabric goes is becoming the commerce layer of the internet. And another good analogy to this, John, is I'll take Stripe as a good example. Stripe's, you know, has done a tremendous job solving for payments. So you as a developer can, you know, simply add Stripe to your application or your user experience, and you can take payments, and they've solved for all that complexity. But there's still lots of nouns and verbs in commerce that have no equivalent as an internet service. So content, product, inventory, pricing, promotions, orders, all the basics of commerce never were built out as commerce services for the internet. And so that's what Fabric's doing foundationally. So we kind of think from first principles there. And then we build up to applications, and then you can imagine it becoming a full platform or suite for a company. So just taking those two things, hey, we've been there and done that from a general management perspective, and, you know, seen every use case. In addition, you add on the kind of engineering and platform firepower, then I think that's a pretty good combination to build a scaled platform over.
Yeah, just listening to both of your descriptions actually makes that Substack article make even more sense to me now, you know, as far as what Fassel, what you were trying to get across. And it kind of leads me to thinking about you know, Shopify Plus or other services that are trying to go this direction, you know, and what I heard was that they're trying to do something from the tech world and something they've been able to automate easily for, say, small businesses, and go into an area that is much more complex in every aspect. And I think what I'm hearing is that that's going to be really difficult for them to succeed in doing that, especially because they don't have the, you know, 50 years of experience type of thing that was mentioned earlier. But with that being said, I think that's pretty clear as far as like how you feel about that. But one of the things, you know, Fassel, that I heard you talking about were, we can do this, we can do that, we understand where you're coming from. But that does sound very service heavy to me. You know what I mean? As in, it's not software. It's also going to take human beings who are going to solve these problems with you and that type of thing. Do you foresee, or are you already there to some extent, where the software will handle the type of things that you were describing?
Yeah, I guess, first of all, when you enter the B2B landscape, there, you can't avoid the service component. And if you do, you're going to lose. You can provide platforms to these companies that are billions of dollars and, you know, run large external sales teams and internal sales teams, but have never really dabbled in running their own commerce online with a team internally. Think about walking into a multi-billion dollar B2B company that has one IT guy and everything outsourced to some international location and running on some old school stack with no real understanding of customer experience, how to sell online, and standing up a store that's actually going to generate in the future probably 50% of their business. So we see this as a massive gap in the market for who actually gets to sell to them. The advantage we have is we have a network of SIs that work with us, systems integrators, that provide a lot of this outside of what we do. So it's really a hybrid approach right now where as we grow the company, completely divorcing ourselves from their day-to-day issues on how to manage the product is not valuable, right? If you look at AWS, how they got everybody on board, they had a whole ProServe arm to do that. You only hear about AWS, the platform. You never hear about the professional services revenue because, you know, the solutions architecture part is actually very critical because you're walking into highly customized software that has technical debt for decades. You can't solve that by just providing a platform and saying, here's our platform, thank you. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, it makes sense. I actually learned that the hard way myself several years ago. I had a digital marketing app that agencies used, and we kind of early on, we were serving SMBs, but we kind of wanted that enterprise money. and so we made a play for enterprise, and boy, that was a wake up call as far as the amount of effort and time and touch, you know, that was involved. And you know, what I learned from it was it's really hard to do both. There was no reason why we couldn't have shifted into just doing enterprise and been very successful at that. But we tried to do both, and it's funny because even going back to the Shopify sort of analogy, I guess, our approach was more Shopify-ish, you know, where we were doing SMB, self-serve, you know, that type of thing, and achieving the needs that our enterprise customers had was pretty much impossible without having human beings with experience who knew how to solve very specific problems that they had.
Yeah, and you're actually calling out Shopify's Achilles heel. For Shopify to turn this Titanic around in a positive way, it's a huge ship that they're coasting on with great revenues, and all of a sudden go from selling at the SMB level to enterprise, it's not a self-serve, quote unquote. There's no such thing. We will build it and they will come. That's complete BS. It doesn't work like that when it comes to B2B. It's going to, like your experience, it's going to require a choice. Are you mid-market enterprise or are you SMB? Because you can't be both. We have made a choice, a deliberate choice, that Shopify Plus is our on-ramp. We do not touch anybody below that. We don't want to. We have no desire to, because that is not our wheelhouse. And by the time you're thinking headless, you need to be doing 10, 15 million. Otherwise, you're really better off on Shopify. And we're, you know, it's a perfect platform for you. But if you're going to deal with large scale enterprises where Commerce Cloud and ATG and SAP live, there's no way you can avoid getting systems integrators, third parties involved in the human part of the equation. We believe product management is still a very new concept. It's nascent in these legacy organizations that they don't really understand the difference between product and project. And it is important. It is our duty to make sure, and it would be highly irresponsible for us to think that here's our platform, go figure it out. Those implementations will fail. So we believe that in the early years, it's going to be a critical sort of core competency for us to provide that, similar to what AWS did and now GCP does too. And we don't believe that that's non-accretive to our overall vision and ethos of what Fabric does. But longer term, as these companies mature, there's less need for that. And we become a more robust, hardened platform where they just come in and use the platform versus anything else.
So I'm curious to know if the CMS that's on almost 40% of the sites on the internet is even on your radar. Does that even, which is essentially WordPress, does that even fit at all? I mean, is that even something you'd even consider? And I'm asking more from a perspective of ignorance, meaning like, I don't know what giant enterprise, you know, commerce related companies use, and if they would laugh at that because the, you know, of course we would only use a JavaScript framework or something like that.
Yeah, John, I think that's a great kind of insight as well. You know, people talk about Shopify and its growth, but meanwhile, they still have a very small market share of the small business market. WooCommerce, which is a, you know, plugin to WordPress, has the large majority of market share. And so there's lots of work to be done to, you know, kind of transition or win that small business space. And that's why we see, you know, a lot of companies focused there. Meanwhile, as you scale as a company to a mid-market business, those tools don't fit for you. WordPress is a great tool, and but it's, you know, a generalist tool as well to publish content. You have to start to become way more specialized in terms of capabilities around the brand experience. So if you think about a company that's growing into a mid-market or as an established business, you have to become a brand. Like, people have to think of you as a destination, and you know, you have to build up that brand equity, which means your experience has to be differentiated. You can't be like everybody else. You can't have the same products and you can't have the same experience. You have to be different, and that's what makes you a brand. And so those kind of tools, I think, are the ones that, you know, we're building out as well, which you can use any tool. You can use WordPress and make it work with a whole heck of a lot of effort, you know, if you want to push it into the kind of scale businesses.
So with headless commerce, the sort of the promise of it is, obviously you're doing on a big scale, you know, enterprise scale. The promise of it is that you aren't limited in your channels per se. You aren't limited in the way that you can sell or sort of have a transaction. And I haven't spent much time with this. My, you know, my expertise and experience is mainly SEO and that kind of thing. I haven't done a whole lot in a, you know, big e-commerce. And so I think a lot of my listeners are probably in that realm too. And so I would love for you to just provide the people who are listening some examples of the really neat things you can do with headless commerce. You know, I mean, from this idea around microservices and the different, you know, I think of ways where, oh, I could take your API and use Swift to build an iOS app for whatever, you know, store. Like, what are some things that are pretty neat that you can do?
John, I would say there's a couple of angles to that. The first is just, you know, taking modular pieces of software and being able to recombine them in different ways. So if you're a company, I don't know, pick a, like a game developer. If you think of a game developer, they want to have like in-app purchases and micro purchases. Well, those are all concepts that of commerce concepts. You need a product, you need inventory, you need pricing, you need promotions, you need a cart, you need payments. And so if you take headless approach, then you're just combining those APIs and you're building that experience in a unique way. And so that's one way of thinking about headless is you can get the best of the capabilities and recombine them, just very similar to like how I think of the big cloud platforms as well, where again, you're taking like compute and storage and networking and building something over the top of it. The second thing is really around scaling to different channels as well. So today, you know, how does commerce happen? Well, it happens in retail stores, and there's a digital component to that. It's growing, obviously, this year with COVID as an accelerant. In e-commerce, what's known as e-commerce, where you go log onto a website and you make a purchase. But The question is, where's that going? Like, what's the endpoints where people shop and how do they shop? Those are going to change over time. And John, I don't know how they're going to change. I just know
that. That was going to be my next and last question, but go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to change and what it's going to look like, the form factors of shopping or procuring or discovering products. But you know, customer experience always changes. And so as you think about that, like, you know, we did some early work at Staples around voice reordering in an office because it's friction to go to a website to place a replenishable order. And I think you'll see, you know, the kind of rise of social shopping happen as well. And so those endpoints, you have to be able to plug in your kind of commerce capabilities to meet the customer wherever experience that they want to be at. So that's really what, you know, headless commerce is about, is if you break it down into a set of services and APIs, then you can recombine it into whatever experience makes sense for that customer in that channel.
So even though you just said you wouldn't answer it, maybe Fassil will. what do you expect, you know, from the future of e-commerce? You know, like, I don't know, 3-5 years out, where do you think see things going? And you know, and you can even kind of say, you know, and this is why I think Fabric is positioned well for that, because it sounds like it is. But, you know, what is the future of e-commerce? Where is the puck going? What should people be thinking about?
Well, let me start, and then Fassil, I think, can add the more interesting bits. But, you know, I've been in e-commerce for the last 20 years, and every year it's grown up and to the right. And so a simple prediction is digital commerce will continue to grow. It's a shocking kind of statistic, much like payments. I mean, if you look at how money flows around the world today, still 85% of money exchange is paper money. So digital is still a very small part of just payments in general, but the same with commerce. It's grown in, you know, the most connected nation in the world, the US, to over 20% this year, but that still means 80% is not digitized. So I think, John, you'll see that trend continue, and I would continue for the rest of my lifetime where it'll continue to grow. And so I think just being in the market of enabling that is exciting for me. I know there's probably more straightforward predictions and interesting ones that Fassil can provide.
Yeah. I think your question is as it pertains to Fabric or in general? Because I have a
few. In general.
Yeah, in general, look, I think that e-commerce up and to the right, agree with Ryan, it's going to keep growing. You know, who wants to? Nobody wants higher prices, slower delivery, and more friction, right? Everybody wants more selection, lower prices, faster delivery, and don't want to move from their house. They want it all delivered. So those fundamentals don't change. What is going to be different is the mode of receiving that order. I mean, I worked at Wing. I can tell you that drone delivery is not applicable for urban locations, and it probably won't be for a long time period. But typically, suburbia has always suffered when it comes to, you know, ideal logistic experiences, right? Like urban locations always get the instantaneous gratification versus suburb and rural don't really get the same level of, whether it's food delivery, product delivery, or any other kind of delivery is always slow. So you'll see delivery modes come in, such as drones or others. Second is just this, the influx of packages and how people consume e-commerce. And Amazon used to have a program years ago called Amazon Tote, which was they would not bring the boxes to you. All the products would come in a tote, so you don't, you know, just collecting Kurgit all the time. I think when e-commerce becomes bigger than 20-25%, at some point, you know, receiving these large boxes just becomes a huge problem. So you're going to see trends that are going to emerge, and lots of new businesses are going to spawn out of that. And commerce is here to stay. The key question is what there were predictions earlier about voice commerce and others that have just kind of failed and haven't really gone anywhere due to privacy issues or others. The one thing it's very clear, B2B commerce is going to explode. And they are still sitting on some draconian, you know, 1.0 version of their website. And outside sales is going to change dramatically to digital sales. And so those thousands of salespeople in a company that's a couple of billion dollars, you don't really need those people doing that, they could be doing much more productive work than, you know, just trying to make sales over phone calls. So where does that all go? We think that B2B commerce is going to be a gigantic opportunity. And from the numbers I've seen, it's probably bigger, if not same size as B2C. So I see a lot of opportunity there, but you'll see a lot of innovation in robotics, last mile delivery, the form in which you receive the packages, and more omni-channel blurring the lines with online. And you know, the early days of ship from store are kind of failing. And there has to be a model that works better. And you'll see a lot of pure play e-commerce retailers opening stores. You'll see more of that because the economics are just upside down if you're just an online player, you know, shipping stuff that's heavy and bulky. So having that physical presence is not a bad thing. And you're going to see it across the board. It won't be just commerce for products. You'll see it in food and you'll see it in other categories pretty significantly.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Walmart go the route of Amazon, you know, where it's always been physical stores, and to then see Amazon go the other way, you know, and even leverage things like Whole Foods and having their locker boxes and stuff like that.
Just one thing to note on there is that, you know, there's winners and there's losers in this space as far as who's going to be the winner and who's going to be the loser. And I feel like the companies that are going to do well here, of course, Shopify is going to do really well. Amazon's probably going to do really well too. But the ones that are just sort of always chasing and not really leading from the front in innovation, and they never have, are going to remain the eBays of the world, just sort of surviving on a thread somehow with the old legacy platform. And just, you know, and part of the reason is just, you know, the talent. If you can't attract the talent, you're not going to build a great product. And Walmart has similar issues. So we believe that we want to be on the right side of that equation, building out the, you know, a top-notch team. So we're very excited about this.
Yeah, from everything, you know, we've talked about, it sounds like Fabric is really well positioned to be the facilitator of that. You know, you, in other words, Amazon's going to do Amazon and Shopify is going to do Shopify, but all of the other businesses who have you know, very large commerce needs, we may end up seeing them being able to do that because of what Fabric is building and also providing from, you know, that hybrid model.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny, we didn't even talk about pricing and costs and things like that, but just these legacy providers, just it's absurd the amount of money that these companies have spent in replatforming. And we find that word to be a really bad word because we don't believe in replatforming at all. We're very modular in our approach. It's absurd that there's no competition in it either. And lastly, I would say Shopify doesn't have to lose for Fabric to win. The landscape is so enormous that you can add another 5 parties to this equation, or 10 or 20, and there's enough there for everybody to stay extremely busy and build very big businesses. So we're excited about the fact that we're leveling the playing field for a lot of these retailers who have, you know, old stodgy tools that don't really have the workflows that you need to really build great product and experiences online. And we also want them to, you know, bring all of their best tools to their merchants and marketers, so they're not, you know, bringing a knife to a gunfight, and they can compete with all the right competitors out there. And that's why we're excited that we're building the right team.
Well, with that, Faisal and Ryan, thank you for taking the time to talk about this headless commerce and what Fabric's doing and sort of the whole landscape of everything and where it's going. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Great to meet you. Thank you.